south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. All right, let's start out with a little email from the Altiplano Drifter. He says, "Hey Johnny, just started watching some of your YouTube shows for the first time. Sending my kudos. That word's right up there with the A word that you don't like." That would be awesome, by the way. Thank God. It seems to be petering out of the vernacular. Only thing is you have to wonder if whatever's going to replace it's going to be worse. So the Altiplano Drifter says, "Johnny, kudos to your YouTube channel, especially to whoever does your picture selections. Some really priceless photos and cartoons there." All right, thanks for that, Mr. Drifter. And you know, I've got more than 150 YouTube shows up there, so do check them out. Just go to YouTube and plug in The Expat Files. And our master picture, phrase, and cartoon selector is also our expat concierge lady leader, my chief expat insider logistics lady, and master sergeant of those famous John Galt trips. Yep. She's German-American, like my mother, who used to say, "We can do anything but cook." But in Jen Galt's case, she's actually a master chef. She's going to kill me for that one. So if you like those YouTubes, it's mostly because of Jen. Oh, and she also runs the newexpat.com website. That's, of course, where you can sign up for my Expat Insider Seminar. Next one coming July 2017. It'll be in and around Guatemala again, at least 90% off the Gringo Tourist Trail. And unlike those other big cattle call seminars that International Living puts on where there's 250 people in a room and you don't get any meaningful boots on the ground, just hotel boots on the ground and slippers on the carpet. All right. So as not to be so nasty and for full disclosure, that's not to say they don't have any boots on the ground at all. They almost always have a nice real estate outing so they can pump their gringo-priced pet projects. I've heard that story from everyone who's attended one of those seminars. So what's different about mine? Well, we give you classes in the morning, and at noon, we're on the road. And man, that's when you really start drinking from the fire hose. And it's true, by the end of each day, you're totally worn out. That's the point. We really pack it in. And it's something you won't forget. Yep, it's a real one-of-a-kind education in the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great. Oh, and remember, we're the only seminar in the world that offers the great little bonus of killing two birds with one stone. Meaning, come down to the seminar and get your permanent or temporary residency started in Guatemala. And why Guatemala? Well, that's where we're doing the seminar. And our seminar lawyer, who's also an intellectual property specialist, has his law firm located in Guatemala City. And he'll be hanging with our group 24/7. Every single day of the seminar, and a couple of days before and after, too. He's fully bilingual, so any questions you have about any legalities, he'll be right there for you. And he'll be giving a segment at the seminar explaining things like banking, corporations, trusts, passports, residency, driver's licenses, contracts, shipping, land purchases, rentals, vehicle purchases, business requirements, taxes, hiring and firing employees, and the basic legal and court processes. Well, you get the idea. It's all about those legal things we need to know, things that are a bit different than how they do things up in the States. However, regarding killing two birds with one stone, you know, coming down to the seminar and getting your residency started at the same time, gotta warn you, it takes about a month to get your own paperwork together up in the States. Sure, there have been some who could do it in a day or two, but that's not normal. Usually a couple of weeks to a month, unless you live in a very big U.S. city that has a Guatemalan consulate nearby, where you can just walk right in, and depending on the traffic, wait 5 minutes or 5 hours and skip all that time it takes to go back and forth with your documents through the mails. So anyway, the bottom line is if you're coming to the seminar and planning on starting the permanent and temporary residency process, to give yourself some breathing space, you pretty much have to sign up for the seminar at least by the first week in June. And then you'll be in good with our seminar lawyer and he can walk you through the process and advise you of the necessary paperwork you're going to need and how to get it notarized and authorized depending on your case. Because, you know, not all cases are the same. For example, if you have Social Security income, you can apply directly for permanent residency. However, if you're getting monthly income from a trust, real estate, an annuity, or another kind of pension, You can skip temporary residency and apply for permanent residency too, though you'll need to present your paperwork in a certain way. So when you arrive for the seminar, which starts on July 8th, our lawyer will be ready for you to sign some more paperwork. You'll have all your correct documents in hand, too. You'll have an appointment at immigration. He'll hold your hand and take you there, and you're on your way. Anyway, getting all that paperwork gathered and authenticated now will save you the time and expense of a trip down at a later date. Yep, you really should do it now while there's still that window of opportunity. One thing we know for sure, the regs and requirements will get tougher, that's for sure. Let's face it, the way things are going up in the States, anything can happen. So I'll ask this question again. How's your plan B coming? Now, one of the most amazing things about having your plan B in Latin America is that you can forget about hunkering down and becoming a prepper. Why would you need to when your own backyard could be a Garden of Eden? You could get off the grid. If you're in the Altiplano, there'll be no heating or air conditioning bills. And if you're homesteading or live in a gated, guarded community, you'll almost always have your own well, so you'll never run out of water. Not to mention in the rainy season, there's way too much water. But you knew that already, right? Oh, and one thing I've noticed too. Even with the people living in the crowded, dirty, nasty big city, every one of them has one or more family members who's a farmer. In fact, during Easter and Christmas holidays, the cities virtually empty out. It's as if there's no traffic at all. It's like the 1960s. And where do you think most of those people go? Well, some of them go to the beach, of course, but most of them go back to the old small town homestead where they came from. Sister Gabriela or Uncle Tio's farm, Grandpa Chepe or Cousin Jaco's cattle ranch. Don't you see? Down here, if the feces hits the ventilator in a big way, the city dwellers all have some place to retreat to where they're growing food. In fact, practically every Latin you meet in the cities is only about one generation removed from being a farmer. Contrast that with people up in the States and in Europe. You talk to the average guy in the street, and you find out they've got pretty much zero family members who are farmers. Up there, when the crap hits the exhaust fan and the big city's shut down, the average person has no family members who have farms or who live out in the boonies producing food. You know, I'm talking about you guys in New York, Jersey, Milwaukee, and Cleveland, you know. It is sad. Things are going to implode, you know, but everyone's in denial about it. The average guy has no place to retreat to, a place that has adequate renewable food resources. Do you? Any farmers in your family? I kind of doubt it. And the stats bear that out. In the first world, 2% of the population is devoted to farming. Here in Latin America, 20 to 30%, depending on the country you live in. So when the poop hits the exhaust fan, where would you rather be? Now, of course you know by now, if you're going to have any kind of reasonable plan B, you have to have residency in another country, preferably a Latin country. Then in most cases, after 5 or so years, you'll get your nationality and passport. And at that point, it really won't matter what kind of capital controls or travel restrictions they put on U.S. citizens, because you'll have dual citizenship. And if you want to travel or do business, whatever, you can do it with your Latin passport. Because, of course, you do know that in most all the world, Americans are persona non grata. And if you think that's going to change for the better, well, just pop another Zoloft. Face it, people in most foreign countries and their governments just don't like us anymore. The huge, glaring exception to that rule being Latin America, where gringos are, well, let's put it this way, they all want to be just like us. And you know, there's one real easy way to prove that point. If you're down here with some boots on the ground, you'll see all over the place Latin people of all social stripes wearing clothing that has the American flag or the red, white, and blue. I love New York, New Jersey, Miami, Seattle, LA, Disneyland, Vegas, Hollywood, Orlando, you name it. They're exhibiting that all-encompassing, I love everything about the U.S. and its people syndrome. Now, what you don't see down here is Latins wearing t-shirts and sweatshirts and hats that say, I love London, Paris, Japan, Germany, and Russia. You just don't see that. Now, you won't see people in Europe or the Middle East with American flag and USA paraphernalia plastered all over themselves. In fact, I dare you to wear a simple old American flag t-shirt in Paris or Munich. If you do, you're asking for trouble or maybe even a fatwa. You get the point, but down here where I am, people just love anything that's got the red, white, and blue, I'm telling you. And that includes t-shirts, hats, mugs, bikinis, and condoms. that say, I love New York or Miami or any place in the States. And if you're watching this on my YouTube channel right now, I've got some really cool pictures to prove it to you. Pictures I've taken myself. Now, I get around, go to a lot of events, and I'm way off the Gringo Tourist Trail. So if I'm going to some kind of concert or fair or shopping deal, beachfront event, motocross, car, bike race, whatever, you can't walk through any crowd without seeing people with the red, white, and blue. These are Latins, not gringos, and man, are they proud of that piece of clothing. And you know, before they started fabricating and mass producing all that I love New York and American flag stuff down here in Latin America, I'm talking maybe 10 years ago or so. Back then, the only place you could get that paraphernalia was up in the States and then bring it down. Well, I had a nice New York Yankee cap. And back then, I can't tell you how many times I was at some kind of event, and a guy would walk up to me, a Latin guy, of course, and he'd say how much he liked my hat and make me an offer. And I'd always be thinking, details, details. Man, would you buy someone's grizzled old greasy cap from him? But that's another story. Anyway, the point is the time will come, and it's actually upon us already, where your American passport is not something you want to flash around, not when you're traveling. And if you flash it at a bank these days, it'll certainly get you a quick walk to the exit. Because banks won't open accounts for Americans anymore. Just too much hassle. Meaning, any smart person that's looking at the future really does have to have a second passport in his or her strategic plan. You know, something's coming and it's not going to be pretty. But you knew that already. Which is why a lot of you up north are getting your Plan B and your ducks in order by signing up for my Expat Essentials course at expatplanb.com. Not to mention, I've been doing more and more personalized Plan B phone consultations. In fact, I'd say I'm doing twice or even three times as many phone consultations compared to last year. Now, don't be fooled into thinking it's because Trump's in office. It's certainly not the Democrats or the people that hate Trump that are working on their Plan B, that's for sure. In fact, if anything, it seems that for a while there up north, there was a lot of hope when Trump got the nomination. But now, the twisted, manipulated media, the deep state, and the so-called pundits, they're all making him out to be either a lunatic, a dunderhead, or a clown. Meanwhile, the U.S. is heading for a cliff like a freight train out of control. But you knew that already too, didn't you? All right, let's talk about living here in Latin America, which means you'll have to rent, buy, or build, unless you're going to live on the beach, in a tent, or crash at your friends' houses. Of course, they won't be your friends for long. You know how that is. But that said, people say, Johnny, you know, you're talking about this big real estate bubble, and you're saying it's a renter's market because people are still building and building, hoping that some buyers will step in, but they won't. They just can't. Because you see, the thing is, all through Latin America, the big money is gone into high-end projects and expensive houses. Houses over, let's say, $200,000 are going up everywhere, but the average person can't even afford a house worth 40 or 50 grand. But you see, it's the cash money driving this thing. It's the money outside the banking system that Latins can no longer put into banks safely that's driving that bubble even bigger. Meaning, you know, you can't walk into a Latin bank, any bank anymore here, just like you can't in the States or Europe or anywhere in the world, with a suitcase full of dough and say, hey, put this in my account. They have those know your customer laws and they stick to them. So anytime you want to deposit over $300, they pull out the forms and you have to write down the origin of that money. That means people with a lot of cash, like, for example, thieving politicians and narcos, etc., they put their dough into one of the last seemingly legitimate enterprises. That would be building construction, because architects and contractors will always take cash. So it's my recommendation, and it has been for some years now, is to just rent. Bide your time and wait for those desperate sellers to start dropping their properties on the market. But you're not going to find any of those deals surfing the net whilst sitting on your sofa up in Cleveland. In fact, you probably won't even find any good rental deals sitting on that sofa searching the net. Because searching from there, you'll be going through a middleman agency that's converted all those Spanish ads into English, and he or she is going to take a big cut. Plus, when properties are listed on English real estate websites, the brokers and middlemen know what the real estate's worth up in the States. And they know, for example, if the average new 2,000 square foot house in the burbs in the States is worth, let's say, $250,000, similar houses in places like Guatemala, Nicaragua, Colombia, and Ecuador should obviously go for less. But how much less? Well, it depends. Those ads might snag a few gringos as long as the price remains 20 or 30% below what an equivalent house would cost where they live. To them, it looks like a pretty good deal. However, if you went down to Ecuador yourself and got boots on the ground, hired a bilingual driver, drove right up to that house and knocked on the door, bypassing all the local middlemen, realtors, and the guys on the net, you're likely to be able to work out a deal for half of what you saw it for on those real estate websites in English. Now, speaking of real estate in Ecuador, I want to read this little email narrative to you. It starts, "My friend said, 'What a dump,' while we looked at a middle-class condo for rent in Guayaquil, Ecuador. But through my eyes, the place looked okay." Then he says, "Typical for Ecuador, clean, safe, cheap, $300 a month, and well-located." Then the narrator said, "That would have worked for me, but not for this guy. You see, he was used to luxury, high-end, first-class waterfront living in the USA. So we kept looking around for different rentals. And we looked. But as we visited the higher-end luxury places for rent in Guayaquil, then Salinas, then Cuenca, he noticed one thing. He said, 'There isn't much true U.S. standard high-end stuff here to choose from, is there? And if you do find it,' as he put it, 'geez, this luxury place is even more expensive than the same place would be in the U.S., where I come from.'" All right, it's me, Johnny, again. Now, remember what I've said over and over again. As soon as the gringos start piling in, up go the prices. I mean, Costa Rica is the perfect example of that. All right, meanwhile, back in Ecuador, the narrator goes on, "It's true. There is a current lack of supply and growing local demand for higher-end places, particularly in the big cities of Ecuador like Quito, Cuenca, and Guayaquil. That causes the high-end luxury properties in Ecuador to be very expensive. In fact, often more expensive than a similar style property would be in the U.S. these days. But note, for cheaper middle-class and lower-class stuff, that is, middle- and lower-class Latin style, there's a ton to choose from." All right, it's me, Johnny, again. Remember how I mentioned many times the definition of middle-class, lower-middle-class, and upper-middle-class in Latin America is different from our experience with those definitions up in the States. What we'd call a starter home or lower-middle-class is a solid middle-class Latin style. What Latins would call upper middle class housing is solid, basic middle class stuff to us. And Latin luxury style is upper middle class to us. And to prove it, remember what I said in a past show? Middle class Latin houses, those are middle class Latin style, rarely are plumbed for hot water. That means they have cold water lines running everywhere. But if you look under the sink, you'll see there's just a connection to the cold water faucet. And the hot water valve on your sink or shower is connected to that same cold water line. So you get cold water, or what they call agua tibia, which is room temperature water, from either tap, cold or hot. Doesn't make any difference, coming from the same pipe. And then they put those crazy, dangerous-looking, point-of-use, shower-head hot water heaters where they want warm water. And Latins call that middle-class living. Would you call that middle-class living up where you come from? No way. That wouldn't even pass muster for a low-class, white-trash starter house. He says, "Now, if you're willing to scale down your lifestyle to middle-class Ecuadorian style," what we're talking about, right? "Trust me, for the most part, it's a bit of a drop-off from a middle-class American lifestyle." Now, he's saying exactly the same thing that I've been harping on for, what, years now, right? Yep, it's me, John, again. And the question is, should you or shouldn't you? I say, don't do it. Don't lower your first-world standards unless you absolutely have to. I mean, look, one of the main reasons you have a plan B and you move to Latin America is because you want to maintain your first world style of life on a small pension or social security check, which you'll never be able to pull off up in the States. Not anymore. I know, people tell me the average social security payout's around $1,400 a month, and that barely covers rent and utilities in most big cities up in the States. All right, he goes on to say, "Now, luxury places are few and far in between in Ecuador. But decent middle-class two-bedroom apartments, that would be middle-class Ecuadorian style, in decent areas of cities in Ecuador, rent for from $250 to $450 a month and are plentiful and easy to find. However, in the countryside, it can be cheaper. And it's true, my electric bills often run less than $10 a month for a two-bedroom apartment." It's me, John Egan. Obviously, the guy lives in the Altiplano and does not run AC. Or he lives on the coast and sweats his ass off all the time. Because, you know, they don't call it Ecuador for nothing. It's on the equator, and that means, by virtue of geography, one of the hottest places on Earth. By the way, every single Latin country subsidizes electric bills for the poor. That means anyone who uses 200 kilowatt hours per month or less, which could be 3 to 5 cents a kilowatt hour. That means you use 100 kilowatt hours, you pay 3 to 5 bucks a month. And in the U.S., the average family of four uses between 500 and 1,000 kilowatt hours a month. Meanwhile, the other 20% of the Latin population whose bills are over 200 kilowatt hours a month, that's us gringos and expats too. And we pay inflated bills to support those subsidies. Those subsidies, of course, being blatant bribes to keep the traditional ruling classes in power. Same thing with public transportation and the entire chicken bus transportation system throughout Latin America. Which is why on many public transportation and chicken bus lines, it'll cost you from 10 to 25 cents to take a ride. Versus a ride on public transportation up in the States or Europe. What's that cost? Couple bucks, right? And still, up in the first world, they subsidize public transportation too. You're not paying the real cost. But you knew that, right? All right, back to the email. Then, the writer says, heck, my water bill is often around $5 a month. All right, meet Johnny again. You know why it's $5 a month, don't you? It's municipal water, and it's not on 24/7. You heard me discuss that on a recent show. Although, if you rent or buy and you're on municipal water, it might seem like you have water 24/7 if you have a nice cistern in the house, usually sitting on your roof, and the builder made good provisions for municipal water outages. But in actuality, almost no municipal water supply in Latin America provides water to anyone's house 24/7. It's been rationed like that for decades, and not principally because cities and towns are depleting their water tables, though there's a lot of that, but because at least 50% of the water in the pipes is lost to leaks and poor engineering and lack of maintenance, or what I like to call maintenance by crisis. So it's true, if you live in middle or lower middle class Latin-style housing, you will undoubtedly be on the municipal water supply, and your bill could very well be 3, 5, or at maximum 10 bucks a month. In fact, I'd say at least half the people on municipal water supplies in all of Latin America are not even on meters. And if they are, there's no meter readers. In most cases, you just pay a flat fee. For example, my maintenance guy, who lives lower middle class Latin style, that's kind of tin shack style. Last time I asked him, he said his water bill was around $1.50 a month. Hey, even back in the 1950s USA, people's water bills were more than $1.50. Oh, and did you know the typical household water bills in large U.S. cities ranges from 25 to 70 bucks a month, depending where you live? Oh, and my water bill in a gated guarded community with our own well? Yep, they read the meters in gated guarded communities because you buy, like I mentioned in a past show, a paja or half a paja of water, paja being 30 cubic meters a month, and you get billed if you go over that. If you use less, it doesn't matter. You still pay the contracted rate. In my case, where I'm living right now, I pay about 15 bucks a month. Still just a little over half of the lowest typical household water bill in large U.S. cities. Now, it's obvious that the guy writing this email from Ecuador, he's living middle-class Latin style, which is lower middle-class, first world style. And he seems happy with it, and that's perfectly fine, whatever floats your boat. But if you're a typical first world person who's kind of a stickler for cleanliness and details, you're going to be disappointed and irritated at times living in a house like that in that kind of neighborhood. What he's describing here is not strict middle class first world living. Now, I know a lot of gringos who came down years ago to Latin America as backpacker types. No problem going to those 5 or 10 buck a night hostels where there's 6 people to a room sharing one bathroom. Some of you know that drill. Fact is, I never traveled that way myself. I always had my minimum standard, you know, my own room and a bathroom. But it seems to me it's a fine lifestyle when you're in college and you're traveling through the world during summer vacation and such. So when coming down to live permanently in Latin America, middle class Latin style, which is lower middle class or kind of white trash first world style, is a definite step up from the backpacker life. But, however, my life plan and objective is never to live lower than middle-class first-world standards. So the guy writing this email, well, if it works for him, great, but it's just not up to my standards and so many other first-world gringos I meet. They don't want to go backwards. They want to stay even or get ahead. And the proof that the author of this email has slightly lower standards that I think you and I are used to is that he says next, I don't have a car because I really don't need one. With so many cheap taxis and buses around that'll take me anywhere I need to go for sometimes $2, that means no car payments, insurance, parking, or maintenance costs. All right, there again, a lot of expats and wannabes and gonna-bes are going to think, man, you know, how can you survive without a car? I don't know. That's a minimum standard for most of us gringos. You got to have your own wheels. It's independence, right? Even if you got a $2,000 or $3,000 junker or a motorcycle in the carport, most of us find that's a necessity. However, I know if you lived in Center City, Chicago, or New York, many people find they don't need a car. They don't even have their driver's license. So maybe for people who lived all their life in that groove, that works just fine. But not for me and the vast majority of permanent expats. For example, what if you live in the Altiplano and you want to shoot out to the beach one weekend? What do you do? Sweat it out on a decrepit, smelly, overpacked chicken bus? Not recommended. But there are always clueless gringos and low-budget backpackers who do. So then he says, and guess what? I don't pay for any other insurances either. With healthcare costs so cheap, I also pay out of pocket for that when I need to. Yep, it's me, Johnny, again. For that, I say, you'd be nuts if you didn't get on one of those very cheap healthcare insurance programs. You just wouldn't believe the deals you can get. For $50 to maybe $200 a month, there are so many different plans you can choose from. Some of them the virtual equivalent of the old Blue Cross Blue Shield programs, which were considered solid gold way back when. Oh, and by the way, I've just updated my 100-page Latin American healthcare report. It shows you just how to get first-world medical care south of the border at third-world prices. And that includes the insurance coverage angles, too. Now, I know one of the latest greatest fads up in the first world is medical tourism in Mexico and other places south of the border. But let me just point out that in most cases, if you do the medical tourism thing, you'll end up going on a website and hooking up with a first world English-speaking medical tourism broker who's going to set you up with the flights and the hospitals and the hotels and all that, and he's going to take a pretty good cut. Well, my report shows you how you can do all that yourself. How to find first world hospitals and clinics, and top-notch Latin doctors and specialists that were trained in the U.S. Anyway, more on my updated 100-page healthcare report in an upcoming show, so stay tuned. Okay, and finally, the email concludes by saying, if you can handle the scale down from U.S. middle-class living to Ecuador middle-class living, that's Ecuadorian style, you can actually stretch your pension much farther down here. But if you're used to a luxury lifestyle in the U.S. and would like to maintain that style in Ecuador, you might just pay more than what you pay in the States.
South of the border.
This is the Expat Files, living in Latin America. If you want me to help you out with your own Plan B, just schedule a one-on-one consult. Send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to learn how to move forward with your own Plan B from right up there in the States, go to www.expatplanb.com and check out my three videos. See ya. Nos vemos.